RadioInfluence.com.
He got him in the white trunks. He heard him.
That's beautiful.
Oh, God.
That's beautiful. He's got it.
And he forced the count.
Wow.
And here's Lucas Amici. And it's all over. It's
nice.
All over. First round knockout.
Big.
He's out. Rich
one
Franklin retains his belt.
The one thing that I never thought in a million years would happen happened.
The champion. The challenger. Here we go.
This is the MMA Report with Jason Floyd on Radio Influence.
UFC 213 and the Ultimate Fighter 25 finale took place this past weekend at the T-Mobile Arena in Las Vegas, Nevada, and we are going to recap both of these fight cards here on this episode of the MMA Report post-fight podcast on Radio Influence. Daniel Galvan and I are going to give you our thoughts on what happened on Saturday night with Amanda Nunes pulling out of UFC 213 due to an illness, Justin Gaethje and Michael Johnson putting on one hell of a performance on Friday night, and everything else that happened this past week. And before I bring in Daniel, I'll let you know about my sponsor, Fight TV. Fight is the go-to app for MMA fans and practitioners. Live pay-per-views, TV tapings, full-length matches, interviews, movies, and documentaries. It's your number one source for MMA boxing and pro wrestling video. Watch MMA wrestling and boxing live on the screen of your choice, phone, tablet, or TV using just the Fight app. Download Fight for your day by going to Fight, FITE.TV/Radio Influence. Once again, that is Fight, FITE.TV/Radio Influence. That link is also available on RadioInfluence.com. Daniel, there is so much that happened this past weekend, but what's the biggest story of the weekend? Is it Amanda Nunes pulling out of UFC 213, or is it the fight between Justin Gaethje and Michael Johnson?
Ooh, that is a great question. And that's a very tough question because it was so... That's all we talked about on Friday was Justin Gaethje, and all we talked about on Saturday was Amanda Nunes. I think the biggest story of the weekend would have to be Amanda Nunes without question. The reason being, Jason, is that it's not clear-cut, right? The Justin Gaethje thing is clear-cut.
Mm-hmm.
He is an absolute badass. Robert Whittaker, pretty clear-cut. Amanda Nunes, this is a situation with a lack of information, a heated situation. A situation where she was kind of thrown under the bus by the UFC and the UFC NWO, but there's a case to be made that bus throwing was validated. So I would say it's Amanda Nunes. And really, I was really hoping that, Joanna Jędrzejczyk would somehow fight. That would be the ultimate star-making performance. Could never happen, obviously, in 2017. But you want to talk about making Joanna Jędrzejczyk a star? The idea of her fighting on like 6 hours notice against a fighter that, should be a flyweight and she should as well. They may fight one day. That would have been the ultimate star making performance.
I mean, let's not be surprised about the UFC throwing shade at Amanda Nunes. I mean, let's not be shocked by that. I had a chance to kind of, feel out some things about that. And one of the things you do hear is that Amanda Nunes does cut a lot of weight to make weight. And I think after the fact, I remember as I was, I went out to watch these fights, which was interesting to me that there was much more people at the bar watching UFC 213 than I saw for UFC 212. I don't know, maybe if the July 4th holiday maybe plays into that or whatnot. But let's not be shocked by the UFC throwing shade at him. I watched the pre-fight show where Bisping and Cruz just railed on Amanda Nunes. I think that this is where Amanda Nunes probably needs a top-notch manager to kind of help, ease this a little bit. But there definitely is a lot of questions when a doctor says, we can't find anything wrong with you, you're clear to fight, and you still don't fight. I don't think there's a lot of fighters who are going to side with Amanda Nunes, though.
Yeah, I mean, I love Michael Bisping, right? Because this is a guy who totally... since October 2016, he's gone out and defended the title time and again against the best challengers. So he really like shut up, Bisping. Like, that's the one guy where it's like, be quiet. The second that Yoel Romero didn't get his hand raised, Michael Bisping could stop wearing Depend underwear. Okay, calm down. All right. What I would say is that, in a sport like mixed martial arts, it's much better that we're trending towards a culture where it's okay to pull out of a fight the day of a fight because it's a fight. And it's better for your body to be on all cylinders than having significant issues headed into a fight. Because, I mean, if you're ill the day of the fight, maybe due to a weight cut, and something significantly horrific happens in the fight, I mean, that's the literal worst case scenario. You can't justify that in hindsight.
But if I think on the other side, though, is if doctors say we can't find anything wrong with you, I think you can understand why a fighter like Cruz or Bisping would be sitting there going, look, you should be fighting if the doctor says there's nothing wrong with you. I mean, there's, you know, we're not inside a Man Nunez camp, so we don't know what happened, you know, whether it was a bad weight cut, maybe she had bad food on Friday or Saturday morning, whatnot. But, you know, you can understand why the UFC would be frustrated. And, you know, look, weight cutting is, we both know it, it's a major issue in today's world of MMA. That's why I think what the California State Athletic Commission doing is great. But, you know, I think a lot of this has to do with the UFC. Just it's more frustration out of their part where, I mean, look, was this going to be a huge pay-per-view for them? No. But, you know, they did put a lot of effort behind promoting this fight financially. So I think that's a frustration. But it's kind of like the backstory of this was I was actually taking a nap on Saturday afternoon and basically woke up to a bunch of text messages, one of those being you, be like, I think your text message was along the lines of, well, I guess Romero Whitaker should have been the main event from the start.
Yeah, well, I guess you totally grasp the frustration. It's had they had the benefit of promoting that fight the entire time, maybe the buy rate would have been higher because, you know, Romero and Whitaker is just a straight up badass fight to promote. That is just two warriors that have looked dominant time and again, and you're crowning a middleweight champion. So yeah, it's very, I like the point you make about the manager, because it does seem like in this public relations battle, Amanda Nunez at this point in time is at the losing end. And it's just due to her providing a real lack of information. There's just a void of kind of filling in the details and filling in an alibi that kind of justifies pulling out of the fight. I'm consistently someone that tries to be sympathetic towards fighters over promotions, just because one has much more resources than the other. And one is actually competing in an athletic contest. It's dangerous. When you have a doctor clear you, you know, Ben Foulkes did an interesting, I don't know if you saw his tweet. I feel like it was him, but it was something like, yeah, maybe it wasn't him, but it was somebody. And it was essentially doctors misdiagnose things quite often.
Very true.
And again, when you are in the moment, it's all about process and decision. And the process, in my opinion, should be if you have something in your mind that you do not feel comfortable with fighting, don't fight. If you feel sick, don't fight, because this isn't a basketball game. Like, it's like you're going out there and you're going to get punched in the face, and you're going to you will end up in a bad way if your body isn't ready. And fortunately, this was a fight that could get called off and no one was too disappointed. Nunez Shevchenko is a great fight. If you're a hardcore fan of the sport, you understand why it's important and why it's so compelling. But for most casuals, for all casuals, I would say, this was not a fight that they had bookmarked. And it really didn't, I would assume, it didn't really hamper the enjoyment of this card. This card was kind of boring, the main card. If you're watching this in like a bar at Buffalo Wild Wings, it was very long. Obviously, the main event was phenomenal. He had some finishes to start the main card. But it was a long card. Overeem, Verdum, and Blades, Olmachuk didn't help. So I don't think this main event getting canceled was devastating. Obviously, if it happens in about 3 weeks, then we can talk about devastating.
Let me ask you something of what Dana White said following this event. I won't main event that title again. These situations arise all the time. I don't know if I'll ever had a situation like today, though. She was physically capable of fighting. Do you at all believe Dana White by saying he will not headline a car with Nunez Shevchenko?
Well, I believe him because he may have seen the expected buy rates. That may be the reason, Jason, not because you...
Yeah, but this is the same guy who says, I won't let John Jones headline a pay-per-view again because I can't trust him, but...
I know, but would you main event a pay-per-view a new Shevchenko just in general?
No.
No, who... I'm sorry.
It's a co-main event.
It's a co-main event. It's great, but it's not the stake. There's, like I said, there's literally like four fights the UFC can make that is the stake now in 2017. So obviously they're not going to have four pay-per-views. But, you know, Nunes Shevchenko is one where he may hold his promise because it's not like this is the John Jones situation where it would be absolutely stupid not to put him in the main event. This one, you can live with not main eventing Nunes again. But if she continues to be champion, I think it's safe to say that she will be in another main event. Still, Shevchenko may change that. So this may be one of these rare instances, Jason, where Dana White doesn't actually look stupid in hindsight. But you're right. The track record of him living up to proclamations such as these is incredibly sketchy. Almost as sketchy as having Ronda Rousey as your fourth-ranked bantamweight. But I digress.
At what point do you pull Ronda Rousey from the rankings?
I don't know, man. I guess never. I think Ronda Rousey is going to be 2027, and we'll talk about her comeback, and it'll be so exciting. You got to do it now, or at least seven weeks ago. Not to transition, but I just want to say, well, I guess I am going to transition here. Tell me if you can guess this, Jason. To me, there were three amazing things about this weekend. Justin Gaethje, Robert Whittaker. What do you think the third thing is?
What is the third thing? How bad Overeem for Doom was?
No, that's not amazing. That is that's what we call fool me once, you know, call me, I don't know the saying actually. Fool me three times and I'm stupid for watching a boring fight. But third thing, it wasn't a fight. That John Jones Cormier video,
man,
was spectacular.
For all the crap we throw and everyone throws at the UFC about things they do, that may be the best promo they've ever done.
Yeah. Yeah. There's something weird about using so much body, like police footage and stuff. Like, it's like you're marketing a crime.
Were you surprised? I was surprised how much they focus a promo on that. It's a true story. I mean, it's not like they're making up facts. They deserve credit for that's just a great promo. But I was just surprised how much they delved into John's issues.
Yeah, well, that's just not how we're accustomed to promotion in any sport. It's always about hiding the flaws, hiding the ugly. When you embrace the ugly, you get like the greatest stories we have as people. When you allow your viewers to go on a journey of peaks and valleys on a real human being, that, I think, is when you really connect with an audience. And it really speaks to how good that video was. The storytelling, when, you know, I watched this in a Buffalo Wild Wings, and people got quiet, you know. They stopped looking down at their spicy garlic wings, and they were watching a video. And when you do that in a setting that is not made to listen to the audio of a screen, you know you've really won, especially when you hold that attention for, I don't know how long that package was, but multiple minutes.
It was one of those things that I was watching that video package, I'm like, okay, can we just tell Cormier Jones to stop training?
Wrap him in bubble wrap, dude, and put him in a cryogenic chamber or whatever. Yeah, that fight, oh my gosh, that fight needs to happen. If it does not happen, I don't know what you know, the UFC, I feel bad for them, man. Obviously, International Fight Week is consistently cursed. What, last 3 years?
3 years in a row now, yeah.
3 years in a row. They really need a big break. This was not like a super positive weekend, I thought. I thought it was mildly positive. They need a big blockbuster, super positive weekend to ride this ship around. UFC 214 on paper as of today looks like that. And I don't know what we need to do, Jason, who we need to pray to, but for the love of goodness, let that main card stick. Okay, I really want that main card to stay as is. I mean, the Santos fight could happen. I don't really care. But otherwise, let that main card stick, because John Jones, Cormier, that's the pay-per-view they're depending on to get that pay-per-view buy rate, yearly average, respectable.
Yeah, I mean, this has been a bad pay-per-view year for the UFC. They just haven't had big fights. I mean, no Rousey, no McGregor. You know, I know they're targeting McGregor to headline that December 30th card, but, you know, 214 is going to be the biggest pay-per-view of the year. Let's talk a little bit. You mentioned about Justin Gaethje, and this is, to me, has got to be the second biggest story of the weekend. What a fight. I don't know if you were like me, but on Friday night, I had casual MMA fans texting me, friends of mine that were watching that fight, and Justin Gaethje. Could you imagine if the UFC had five Justin Gaethjes?
Man, it would be a phenomenal main card if you put them all in five different fights. He is guaranteed action. That is rare because it's kind of a stupid idea. And we saw him almost pay the receipt for that twice in this fight. But I love that he exists. I love watching him fight. I love his interviews. Justin Gaethje is just, for a guy with a last name as hard to spell as he does have, what a star, man.
I mean, like, it's so interesting to listen to him talk. I mean, who is a fighter that says, yeah, hey, I'm going to get knocked out at some point?
He seems like a fighter's fighter. To get Conor to tweet about you is the ultimate sign of...
You think about fighters that are going to get Conor McGregor back in the octagon? Is Justin Gaethje skipping the line?
Yeah, I mean, well, first off, Conor definitely saw this fight and probably likely thought, I can counter this guy like crazy. I can put this guy away.
Well, you saw Gaethje's line about McGregor, right? He's like, yeah, he's got a great left hand, and if he lands, it's going to knock me out.
Yeah, and Conor's like, I love this guy. He accepts reality. So, look, Justin Gaethje, honestly, is the guy at lightweight to do the fight with. You got to get him a big-time win. He's got to go into the lion's den and take on the Tony Ferguson-type fighter. And honestly, I think you got to do it now. Because,
yeah,
first off, Justin Gaethje, phenomenal fight. Fight of the year contender. I can't, at this point in time, think of something that comes close. I'm sure you have. What have we seen this year that's been as close as this?
Man, this year in terms of great fights,
there's definitely been great fights. It's July. I can't believe I can't think of any.
In terms of fights that just like you're like, I can't wait to watch. I mean, obviously Cormier Jones is one of those fights. I mean, look, I think Khabib Ferguson was one of those fights that you sat there and said, this is a fight I can't wait to watch. But there just hasn't been many fights. I mean, the thing about Justin Gaethje. And, you know, Friday night was the introduction to Justin Gaethje for a lot of MMA fans. And this guy, it's, you know, I've talked about it. This guy's must-watch TV, and he showed it. You know, on the brink of defeat, which we have seen multiple times in the past with Justin Gaethje just because of the style he has. But it's just like, I would not blame the UFC one bit if they go, you know what, we're doing Gaethje Ferguson for the interim title. Sorry, Khabib, you've been passed.
Yeah, I mean, that's, you got to do that one, actually. I really think so, man, because, excuse me, first off, Khabib's injury issues is a big deal, and he really needs to just put it together. And when you line up a McGregor fight, you really want something you think is going to take place. That's just simple. You want to promote the hell out of the fight, and you want to sleep at night that there's a high likelihood that it will take place. So I think Gaethje Ferguson is the way to go, man. Again, this matchup should happen sooner rather than later because of his striking defense. This is a guy who can get caught against anybody in the top 10. He can just as well catch them as well. So you look at the momentum he has, having the fight of the year type bout. And again, the only fight I can think of thus far is maybe the Poirier-Jim Miller fight that happened earlier in the year, but this one was better, I think. You have him have that fight. You have him on SportsCenter, all over Twitter. Seems like a star Saturday night in attendance. I think you don't want to squander the momentum, and you put him in a fight against Ferguson, because if he does win, Gaethje McGregor is a marketable fight, obviously. Gaethje Ferguson sounds like an absolute delight. Honestly, you line up Justin Gaethje against any human being, and you can talk yourself into that being a fight of the night contender.
No, it's like you text me on Saturday. Like, if your goal as a fighter is to get a fight of the night performance of the night bonus, do you really want to be on a Justin Gaethje card?
Yeah, you are literally disqualified from winning one of the three awards. There's no way Justin Gaethje, if Justin Gaethje ever has a fight in the UFC that he doesn't win a performance the night, it means he got knocked out in 7 seconds. Otherwise, guaranteed. Yeah. I mean, I do wonder what a fight like him versus Nurmagomedov would look like. Obviously, Nurmagomedov would probably have success with the wrestling, but I do wonder if Gaethje would be able to still make it a compelling fight. I wouldn't bet against him, man. I mean, you look up and down. Can you just imagine these fights against Ferguson or Alvarez or Edson Barbosa, Nate Diaz one day?
I think he would light up Nate Diaz.
That would be a
because does Nate Diaz really defend leg kicks?
Yeah, and he loves to light up.
That's true, but I mean, it's yeah. You said there is so many fights that you go would watch with Justin Gaethje in the UFC. But I put this out on Twitter, and the overwhelming response was Justin Gaethje here. But what's your thoughts on who is the better free agent acquisition, Justin Gaethje to the UFC or Rory McDonald to Bellator? To me, I think it has to be Justin Gaethje just because it's a fighting style that is going to get the casual sports fan to tune into the UFC product to watch Gaethje fight. I don't see the casual sports fan going out of their way to watch Rory McDonald fight.
Yeah, that's a good question. I mean, Rory McDonald is more of a long-term acquisition for Bellator. He's going to be one of the foundational pieces of that promotion. Justin Gaethje could have been one as well, honestly. But I would still go with Justin Gaethje, largely due to he has a likelihood of main eventing a pay-per-view and doing a great buy rate. It will likely be due to his opponent for that buy rate. When it's all said and done, he may have a higher eyeball per appearance, although maybe not, because depending on how many pay-per-views he's on. That would draw that down. But I would say it's Justin Gaethje, but it's closer than you would think because Rory McDonald is a fighter that justifies Bellator big time. This is a guy who at welterweight, when in a few fights, could make a case for being one or two in the world. And that has an incredible amount of value. But Justin Gaethje is probably more valuable to the UFC because of that guaranteed excitement, because of that freshness, the undefeated record, and with one win, he's a guy who could be a star maker in that if he fights Tony Ferguson and does lose, you're probably still going to get a lot of attention to that fight in the aftermath. And if he goes and beats Tony Ferguson, Gaethje versus McGregor is a fight that you could really sell well and really do a big buy rate for. Obviously, no, duh. You do McGregor versus Mop, and it'll do a big buy rate. But yeah, Gaethje really sticks out as one that would be fantastic, and maybe you can do it in Ireland. I don't know.
Look, there's I think the other question on Justin Gaethje is this: is his next fight on pay per view or Fox?
Fox Ferguson Gaethje Fox. That has to be it. You need to do a good Fox card. My friend did not know I went to Buffalo Wild Wings with a friend, Tinder date. Just bio was UFC 213. You up?
Whoa. So you didn't go with the, let me do the hottest wings you have to try to pick up a waitress?
No, I did both. I'm a player. No, I'm kidding. I went with a couple guy friends and they did not know who Valentina Shevchenko was.
Why are you surprised by that?
I'm not surprised, but what I'm saying is she may have been in two Fox cards. You got to make UFC on Fox great again.
But here's the thing about Fox. What fighter has become a pay-per-view draw after being on Fox?
Well, it's like a chicken and the egg, Jason. You put them on Fox because they're not a pay-per-view draw.
Yeah, but that's like the thing. Like I think that people just think that automatically, you put you on free TV and this is going to get you, people more interested in fights. I was listening to Joseph Benavidez. He was on Brett Okamoto's podcast, and he was he had a really very interesting kind of thought process about making stars because he was talking about the DJ thing. And he said, he goes, everyone's like, oh, you got to be the next Conor McGregor. He's like, let's stop saying this because there's not another Conor McGregor. He goes, look, Conor has extremely great fighting style that everyone loves, and the guy knows how to sell a fight. He goes, but here's a reason why it's tough to be the next Conor McGregor. Connor's got a country behind him to where all these people are going to come to Vegas and watch him fight. You don't see, you know, the United States fan getting behind a fighter like they do McGregor, how Ireland gets behind McGregor.
Yeah, that's a big deal. The obviously, that character is beautiful in so many different ways. The character of Connor, the trash talker, Ireland versus the world. It's hard to replicate that, and I don't know if we ever will. Here's a thought on the Fox thing, by the way. I feel like the best fight that ever took place on a UFC on Fox card was on the first night, but it wasn't televised. Guida and Pettis. And
I don't know if you remember that. You remember that was when UFC streamed prelims on Facebook?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That seemed like forever ago.
I know. And it was to me, it seemed so cool at the time. And
it was 6 years ago.
Yeah. And now, the evolution of technology and the way we consume sports in 6 years is very scary. But what I'm saying is, so 6 years ago, Jason, when that Fox deal was made, what was the dream of the UFC? A platform where we can have Griffin versus Bonner. I don't think that's happened. There's been great main events. There haven't been phenomenal channel changing type fights on Fox. That's the one difference. Is what Fox brings to you is a potential platform to tell the story of violent action and garner the attention span of the internet for a given point in time. And actually, having run over 20 events, that may not have actually ever happened thus far.
Yeah, you know.
What fight was amazing? Robbie Lawler, Matt Brown was quite awesome, obviously. There have been a couple other good main events.
There hasn't been that fight where people are calling their friends, texting their friends, and like, dude, you got to turn on Fox. It's an incredible fight. Now, I mean, like, think about what if Gaethje Johnson would have been on Fox on Friday night.
Well, yeah, it would have been similar. The platform would have been bigger. Just being on national TV in primetime, or that, I guess it wouldn't be primetime, but being on national TV like that. But I guess it would be prime time.
But I agree with you. I think the route to go with Gaethje is Fox next.
Yeah, and you know what they really need? Fights that, I don't know. Man, I think the 3-round main event isn't the worst thing to bring back. It's probably a bad opinion. But I actually, the more and more I think about it, there's something nice about the 3-round main event for non-title fights. I really do think so, because sometimes you get these fights that are drug into the 4th and 5th round and you lose the attention span of the consumer. Obviously, it's a sport, but and this is me just throwing out ideas, but maybe go back 3-round main events for non-title fights. I don't know.
Well, I mean, that's the thing. I mean, obviously, Bellator, I know there's been some – I've heard there's been talk internally about – you know, going to the 5-round non-title main events. But, you know, I think there's also fighters. I don't think they're all in on the idea of a 5-round non-title fight. You know, I mean, obviously money can play into that. You give a guy enough money, all of a sudden they'll go into it. But I don't think it's a terrible idea to go away. You go back to a 3-round main event when it's a non-title fight. But, you know, Gaethje Ferguson on Fox would be, I think, an ideal route to go. And you could literally sell that up as, you know, hey, the winner of this fight's going to fight Conor McGregor.
Yep. But Conor, I don't know what the date would be. It would have to be after McGregor Mayweather. Obviously.
But if you're Conor, does Conor sit there, call the UFC, go, look, I know we're talking about December 30th. Let's just book me against Gaethje. I wouldn't be surprised by that.
Man, dude, Connor ain't thinking about that. I mean, it's in the back of his mind. He's probably had the conversation, but this is the biggest fight of his life.
But let's be, if somehow, and it was, we actually were, when we were watching the fights last night, me and my buddies, we were actually talking about, you know, Connor and Floyd, and, you know, there was a story on Bloody Elbow about how, you know, Floyd's, you know, trying to, you know, has IRS issues, which obviously put, you know, tells you, well, here's why he's taking this fight. He's got IRS issues, you know? But, you know, we were sitting there going, you know, hey, no matter what happens on August 26th, do we ever see Conor in the UFC cage again? And if somehow some miracle happens and he defeats Floyd Mayweather, I don't think there's a chance in hell we ever see him again in the UFC.
Yeah.
Because then all of a sudden there's a rematch and it's even a bigger payday. I mean,
then he fights Canelo, then he fights Golovkin, then he moves up to heavyweight, then he takes over the world. Yeah, that alternate reality where that takes place.
But you think about fights that are going to get Conor excited to come back to UFC? It's Gaethje.
Yep.
Maybe I don't see Conor getting excited to fight Tony Ferguson.
Yeah, I mean, it's weird that he's talking about the Nurmagomedov thing in Russia so much.
That's never going to happen.
No wonder he's talking about it so
because,
much.
Because A, you're putting Conor McGregor on pay-per-view. You're not putting him on any other platform, so you're not doing a pay-per-view in Russia.
Mm-hmm.
So that, you know, let's just take that out. I mean, Conor McGregor's fighting in Las Vegas the rest of his career.
Yeah, he's fighting in the home of the Las Vegas Golden Knights. I don't think he's fighting Las Vegas the rest of his career, dude. I mean, he's doing a stadium show if he fights again.
If you're ever going to go to Cowboys Stadium, McGregor's the guy you go with.
Yeah. So right now it's 550 in Russia.
But if you're the T-Mobile Arena and, you know, the power players in Las Vegas, you're probably doing whatever you can to make sure that McGregor always fights in Las Vegas.
Yeah, I mean, he is the modern-day big money fighter today. He fights. It's an event. There's about three or four of those guys every time Canelo or Triple G fights, similar. Obviously, Floyd, similar. Pacquiao, not so much anymore. But he's one of four or five or six guys where when he fights, it's not even about the fight itself. It's almost about the romantic idea of attending the fight and seeing all the celebrities and whatnot. So he's Las Vegas personified. And that does appear to be his home. But again, Conor, you have that type of drawing power. He continues to fight. Unquestionable that the majority of his fights take place in Las Vegas, in Nevada, but he's got to do some big time creative things when it comes to just getting a lot of people in a proximity, you know, in a stadium, etc. Different countries, etc. But countries where it lines up pay-per-view wise, time wise.
In terms of countries and what makes sense for the UFC, does it make sense to do Robert Whittaker, Michael Bisping in Australia?
I mean, they could do the pay-per-view slot, right?
That's not an issue.
Yeah, Bisping, Whittaker. I mean, if I'm Michael Bisping, I would absolutely hate that. That would not be fun. He is a different animal. A guy who's naturally been the heel up until he became champion. I think that's when it turned around the way people felt about him. So maybe he's used to the booze. But what an environment to walk into as the defending champion. I don't really know what he did after the post-fight thing with the belt thing. It was kind of weird, but it was cool, but weird at the same time. It made no sense. Maybe he thought he was holding the interim title.
At the end of the day, I think Bisping wants that GSP fight because from a financial aspect, you understand where he's coming from.
How do you do that circus after that fight and then take the GSP fight?
I mean, how about Bisping is trash talking Yoel Romero before the fight even starts?
Yeah.
I mean, look, it was a clear win for Robert Whittaker. I thought 48-47 was a clear scorecard. Romero, first and second round, then Whittaker, rounds 3, 4, and 5. And I said this, and I got a lot of response on this on social media. I think the fight to make now is Yoel Romero, Luke Rockhold.
Yeah, that's a great... Romero ain't getting younger. He's looking younger, that's for sure. And a guy who... He looked bad ass in the first two rounds. You know what the issue is for Romero is, like, Whittaker was really injured. Not sure if he knew it or not, but to then go and lose round 3 through 5 against a guy who has, you know, basically three limbs. That's a rough look, very rough look, especially after looking like a destroyer and a true soldier of God. It's like, oh my gosh, I'm watching this guy. Maybe he actually is the soldier of God. I need to start listening to him, but he's still a freak. You know, he's in the cage and people may not know his name, right? They're just looking at the screen. You see a guy like that and you just have to pay attention to whatever he does with his fist. He did some weird. This was a great fight. It was just a almost like a Rocky type fight where you had the comeback from the injured guy who is a slight underdog, although Rocky is usually a bigger underdog. Great fight. I really thought Romero made some weird mistakes in this fight where he was allowing. There was a point in time where he was like on his knees just staring at Whitaker, and Whitaker just landed quite a few shots on him. It was like Romero was being too unorthodox for his own good, and that cost him multiple times and getting hit in the face.
But, you know, solid performance for both guys. Robert yeah. Whitaker, I'm so, you know, and I was thinking about as I was watching the fight, when this guy moved up to 185 pounds, I didn't think this guy was, I didn't see an eventual, you know, interim UFC champion. And you remember he was actually supposed to fight Michael Bisping at UFC 193. I think that's something people kind of forget about. And I put this on Twitter. Who's picking Michael Bisping to beat Robert Whittaker?
Not many. Not many. I would love to see those odds.
Outside of people in the UK, mm-hmm. Is anyone picking Michael Bisping? Because you know, we always talk about the path to victory. Well, what's the path to victory?
Yeah, this is going to be a big...
Is Michael Bisping going to take Robert Whittaker down? No. I mean, we saw... I mean, I thought Whittaker did an adequate job against Romero. We saw what he did against Jacare earlier this year. I just don't think it's a good matchup for Michael Bisping.
Yeah, there isn't too many guys at 185. I feel better about their takedown offense than Romero. And the way Whittaker handled it against a guy with technique and strength is one where... You look 1 through 15 and you ask yourself, who's going to bring him down to the ground? The answer is nobody. Romero's the toughest one, I think, among the top 15.
Oh, no doubt.
And that's going to be a compelling fight. Again, the odds would be great to see a champion like that, how wide the odds will be. Health will be a big concern for Whitaker. To return to form after an injury like that is always a high priority. So this has been a crazy ride for him. Like you, I mean, I don't think anyone expected this out of him to be a champion one day. I think they expected, having seen his stand-up arsenal, success in this division for sure, but not this dramatic. It's hard to expect anybody to become a champion. And he just, it just seems like time and again, he continues to level up, and he did it once more. A guy that has a real energy about him that is hard not to like, but continues to evolve his game. Stand-up is so well done. He took advantage of Romero's lack of output rounds 3 through 5. Round 2 was a rough one for Whitaker, but he continues to look good, man. A true warrior. And Whitaker Bisping is a fight I'm looking forward to. It's crazy that it's been 20 pay-per-view events since UFC 193, but here he is, champion. And Romero Whitaker, this may not be the last time we see that fight, because Romero versus Rockhold is a fight where the winner, regardless of who it is, is likely the next title challenger without a doubt. So we could see a rematch here, but I think Whitaker Bisping's a big time fight. Obviously not as big as Bisping versus GSP, but one that I hope they make after the dance they did post fight.
Well, let's hope they don't make the fourth fight between Fabricio Werdum and Alistair Overeem.
You know what? Don't speak for me, Jason. I thoroughly enjoyed this classic contest of big heavyweights that had a big, like, it was like a game where they thought you score more points if you don't land any shots. Yeah, this fight, first two rounds, bad. Fabricio Werdum looked great in that third round. It's kind of weird that Overeem got his hand raised after, you know, watching a third round like that. I think the biggest mistake Werdum had was in that third round, going down to the ground after rocking over. His best likelihood of winning the fight, I thought, was continuing to strike with Overeem and try and put him away. So I think he kind of threw away the fight right there, because he went down and Overeem was just able to tie him up and stall and let the fight end. He had Overeem in incredible danger. A fight that I think he could have scored 10-8 just due to the fact that Alistair Overeem was not thinking, you know, didn't have his full head with him after getting rocked like that.
You know, going into this fight, you knew that the winner had the potential to kind of make their case for a title shot. And, of course, Overeem did not make a case for a title shot. Everything you hear is the UFC wants to do Stipe, Cain, as long as Cain's ready to go. So, to me, the biggest winner from this fight probably is Francis Ngannou.
Mm-hmm. I don't
because
know what he does
if
next.
If Ngannou goes out there and just wrecks JDS in September,
yeah,
he's probably the second option for Stipe's next title shot.
Yeah, he jumps over him without question if he wrecks JDS. Even if he wins a close war or something like that, he would still probably be the option. So Overeem Verdum had the credentials to where the winner would be in a position to get a title shot, and currently they are number two behind Kane. Overeem is. But Ngannou was the big winner, and hopefully if Francis can go show up at UFC 215 and get the dominant win, he may just get that fight due to the fact that Cain Velasquez, like a few other fighters, doesn't necessarily show up every time he gets lined up. It's not his problem. It's not his fault. You know, it's his body. So, and I think that's why we're highlighting the other options so much, is because it's almost like understood that in the heavyweight division, it's usually the backup plan that ends up being the actual plan. So Francis, the big winner out of that co-main event was not Overeem, although he moved up and progressed himself. It was Francis. And the big loser was Verdum, obviously, for not winning that fight. He has quite a bit of heat on him for statements he's made on social media. And the more winning he does, the more leverage he has, and he lost a bit of leverage with this loss.
Yeah, and so, you know, of course, this was back-to-back fights that just did not deliver on pay-per-view. Blades and Lunchuk.
Just, you didn't like that fight either?
No, I did not. I thought it was a showcase fight for Curtis Blaydes, and it was not a showcase for Curtis Blaydes.
No, man. 14 takedown attempts, 14 unsuccessful takedowns. This was not great for Curtis Blaydes. Daniel Olmochuk is not a fighter a casual fan sees in the cage and thinks this is a tough son of a gun that will put away Blaydes. I mean, this was clear to anyone watching that it was a setup for Blaydes. Blaydes won every round, but he was not able to look dominant in any fashion. And that is a major, major shine. All I could think of watching Curtis Blaydes is, man, Francis Ngannou is really good. I can't wait to see him fight again. So yeah. I'm sure he will put things together. He has plenty of nice tools, plenty of promise. Olmochuk is a top 15, very, you know, 14, 15 type heavyweight. So, you know, not a good performance out of Curtis Blaydes for sure.
I did love the Pettis-Miller fight.
Fantastic fight. Back and forth. Loved it so much. Return to form for Anthony Pettis. And Jim Miller also kind of revitalized himself. This felt like a throwback. This fight would have made a lot of sense in 2013. And it's good to see both these guys fighting at a high level.
Great to see Pettis back at 155. After what we saw at 145, where just he took so much out of his body just to make 145 pounds. You know, I think the one thing you still see with Pettis is what happens when you put him in there with a guy that can wrestle. And in that first round of that fight, I just didn't understand what Jim Miller's game plan was.
Yeah, well, what did you think? Like, what do you think was in his head? Of like, you know what I need to do against Anthony Pettis with my own skill set? Outstrike him. That was a bad idea. What do you think his justification was for that lack of takedown?
The only thing I can think of is maybe was he just trying to wear him out in the first round and then get the fight to the ground in the second round. But it was just a really odd start to the fight for him. But a great fight between those two guys. Rob Font, who gets a performance of the night bonus submission win against Douglas Silva de Andrade. I thought just an incredible performance by Rob Font, a guy that definitely is going to get people interested there at 135 pounds. You know, we talked about on the pre-fight show about Travis Brown and a loss, what that meant for him. And I thought, I mean, you know, he had his moment there in the first round, but kind of a flat performance from him. And I don't see the UFC bringing him back.
Yeah, especially after Dana calls for him to maybe retire. Never good for your boss to say that after you go and fill in a shift at McDonald's as a cook, and then your boss goes after the press and says maybe you should hang up the spatula. That's a rough one. And for Brown, not a good sign. There was something depressing about that fight, I felt, just watching him fight. I mean, just constantly, I watched Brown fight. And all I can think of is, like, him and Ronda at the house, like, 3 days from now, talking, like, he's just bummed out, like, he shows up to the house with like, all right, Ronda, you know the house rules. We can't talk about fighting.
But the question I think with Brown in the future, I mean, look, Ronda has things outside of fighting where she can make money. What does Brown have? That's got to be the question.
Relationship with Ronda Rousey. He has a relationship with Ronda Rousey, which is like a nice financial really. Yeah, he doesn't have too much. He can be a trainer, obviously. What a high skill level he has. Very few fighters are as good as him in the world. I mean, there's about like 25 heavyweights probably, but he's good. He could be a trainer. He could be successful in some promotions. It's just that, and his stand-up looked good in the early moments. It's just he started facing some adversity, and it just seemed like once he got behind, he was unable to get back up and refocus his stand-up arsenal and defend takedowns, and that was it was a tough loss. It was a matchup where against Alexei Oleinik, who is a real veteran, a guy with a solid grappling game and so many fights. So it's not the worst loss in the world, but the way he lost and in a fight where he was expected to perform well, I'd be kind of shocked if we see him in the UFC again, which is just a dramatic fall from grace from the upside he showcased early on in his UFC run.
And I think Bellator would easily sign him.
Yeah, he's a name for sure. And he's a fairly exciting fighter as well. So he's a guy, if I'm Bellator, I would sign. And for him, maybe that's the best move for him. That is a easier division, obviously, and one in which he can get some wins, get his confidence back. And again, his striking did look well in the first half of the fight. That's something you can take at and build upon. It's just that the tie, the momentum dramatically shifted.
In terms of the rest of this preliminary card, victories by Chad Laprise, Thiago Santos, Bilal Muhammad, Cody Stamann, and Trevin Giles. I think the one result that sticks out to me, at least, is Thiago Santos. This is a guy that I think we kind of counted him out after, you know, he had those back-to-back losses against Gegard and Eric Spicely, but now has come back with back-to-back TKO victories. That's the result that probably surprises me the most of what happened on the prelims.
It wasn't the result because Laprise won, but Brian Camozzi looks pretty good in rounds one and two. And the second they got in the cage, I'm like, oh, God, I did not realize Camozzi was that much bigger than Chad. This is going to be a real factor. And it was, especially in round two. But Laprise bounced back and got the finish. The guys that really stood out, I thought the fight pass guys looked really good. Featherweight with Cody Stamann and light heavyweight, especially with Trevin Giles. Trevin looked phenomenal in that 205. Anytime anybody looks good in that weight class, you take notice. And Trevin is a guy I really took notice on, and I'm looking forward to his next fight.
Well, I mean, with Cody Stamann, he's obviously going to go – I would expect that you're going to see him go back down to 135 pounds because that's the weight class he does primarily fight at, and I think you'll see the same thing there with Terry Ware. You know, the question also, I think, with Trevin Giles is, does he return to 185 pounds, where, of course, that's where he fought in LFA. You know, of course, both of these fights were short-notice fights. You know, they – I want to say it was 8-9 days when those fights came together because of, losing the fights on this fight card. So that'll be something kind of interesting to kind of see. But definitely some guys that you are interested with. In terms of Friday night's card, Jesse Taylor, a guy that I don't think the result is very surprising in terms of how he got the victory here. But great to see kind of the true redemption story of what this season was. Drakkar Klose, split decision victory. I didn't understand the split decision aspect of this. I didn't see why a judge thought that Mark won two of the three rounds there. In the crazy thing about this was there was a point in this card where Tisha Torres had the only stoppage victory on this card, and of course she had never won a fight by stoppage.
That is, we were talking about in the pre-fight show, and I laughed so much when she got it. Proud of her. I'm excited, man, that she got that submission win over Juliana Lima. That would have been the most Tisha Torres thing in the world.
But
we're talking about a fight card where she was the only finish.
Here's the thing about Tisha Torres. Her best wins are not in the UFC.
Mm-hmm.
They're in Invicta. When she beat Rose Namajunas back in 2013, she beat Felice Herr. You look and Juliana Lima is probably her best UFC win, and that's kind of crazy when you're talking about a fighter who's, I believe she's the number 5 challenger right now. Her UFC wins, Angel Magana, Angel Hill, Jocelyn Jones-Liebarger, Beck Rawlings, and Juliana Lima. None of those fighters are ranked in the top 15 in the UFC women's strawweight division.
Yeah. She showcased the potential she showed early on in her career has really presented the perception we have of her. And I think it's a justified perception. It's just that she hasn't been successful against the greatest fighters. But I think that's kind of changing, man. It does seem like with this fight, it could be a real change of her career. This could be the time when, you know, she kind of hits the NOS and accelerates quite a bit. I think she may get a big fight next, maybe against Michelle Waterson. And I think she will have a lot of success in that fight. So this could be a big turnaround for Tisha Torres, much like Jesse Taylor and how he turned his career around. That was a fun fight, man. That second round was almost like his life in a nutshell, where he got rocked early, but then came back and got that submission win over Lima.
And this was a little bit of a long card on Friday night, too, just because of the amount of decisions we had on this fight card. Got to give you kudos. We talked about best underdogs, chance to win. We both hit on Friday night with I had Dracar close, but you had Gray Maynard. Complete domination by Gray Maynard, and a guy that, just uses wrestling and, a style that I think the UFC's not going to, love, but he did what he needed to do, and it was complete domination.
He's probably going to continue to win fights. That will be a big deal for him if he continues to fight like that. Yeah, feel bad for Taruto. Obviously a superstar in the making, guy we both love. But Maynard just, he had that one skill that Taruto could not defend, and it led to a very dominant performance. Yeah, man, there really were a lot of long fights. I mean, no fight ended in the first round. You know, Gaethje Johnson felt like it lasted about 90 seconds, even though it was a 9-10 minute fight. But a pretty disappointing Friday night, I thought. Obviously, it's hard to say that when you have a main event that good and a co-main event that good. But up until that point, up until those last two fights, it was a grueling experience. I mean, I really liked Jakar, and Mark definitely had it 29-28 for Jakar. I'm sure nobody in England likes him anymore. What a crazy statement after that fight, right?
Yeah, I mean, it was, and that's why, when you're evaluating prospects, it can be tough, and obviously Mark was a guy that everyone was high on. But, I think stylistically, it was not the greatest of fights for him, and Jakar gets the win. Of course, we're doing this here on Sunday, July 9th. Next Sunday is the next UFC Fight Night card. Are you at all excited for this Fight Night card headlined by Gunnar Nelson and Santiago Ponzinibbio?
No, I'm not. But I'll get hyped, man.
I put out the fight card lineup for this earlier this week.
Yeah.
And someone said, is this the worst UFC fight card we've seen in a long time?
Dude, there was a fight card not too long ago that was absolutely ass. I don't think so, because this card is more deep than you would think. When you have Leslie Smith and Brett Johns on your prelims, your fight pass, that's pretty good. It's pretty good.
I love that Johns Morales fight.
Yeah, yeah. And Leslie Smith is a fun fighter to watch. Alexander Pantoja versus Neil Siri is another good fight as well. This is like not the worst card, I would say. The co-main event is very good too.
It's not going to get people excited though.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. It's not.
I think for the hardcore fight fan who knows who these fighters are, they're interested in that, but I think for the casual MMA fan, this is not a card that's going to get in there. Of course, also coming up here in a couple of days, we've got Bellator 181 headlined by the trilogy matchup between Derek Campos and Brandon Gertz. Also, Joe Warren is on that fight card, taking on Steve Garcia. Coming up on Wednesday's episode of the MMA Report podcast, I will have an interview with Derek Campos and Joe Warren. They'll both be on the podcast, so you'll be able to hear that. Also, on that podcast, I have interviews with Emily Ducote and Rafael Lovato Jr. Really looking forward to that the Lovato Jr. Rhodes fight on the prelims. And on Tuesday night, we've got the inaugural episode of Dana White's Tuesday Night Contender Series. Are you like me and going to tune into the commentary of Snoop Dogg and Uriah Faber? I just want to see what this sounds like.
Yeah, man. There's going to be a lot of coughing in that commentary booth. That could be fun. It could be a train wreck, but I think that's a smart play for Tuesday night, because I think that's what most people are talking about rather than the fights. Could be some good fights. I'm looking forward to it. I like the little promo they did as well. But, I may not have been sold, but the second you told me Snoop Dogg was providing analysis on two guys fighting, kind of sold now.
And I tell you, I love the fact that these fights are going to start at 8 p.m. Eastern time, 7 p.m. Central time for you. I did see Matt Bissett posted on his Facebook page that his understanding is basically it's fight, 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 fight. There is no filler in between this. It's going to be one fight ends, one fight goes. So if you're going to tune in, there is five fights. You've got Joby Sanchez, who had been in the UFC previously. He's taking on Manny Vasquez. Also, you have Charles Byrd against Jamie Pickett on this fight card. Gregor Bello, who I've had a chance to interview multiple times before, he's on this on this show as well. Of course, Pissett and Hollenbaum. It's essentially a regional MMA show. Let's call it what it is.
These are not
UFC fights. They are not UFC fighters, but it's a great opportunity. And you know, one of the things I've heard is that the pay for this is $5,000 a show, $5,000 a win, which is money that for the most part, unless you're going to go fight in Russia, you're not going to get that kind of money on the regional scene.
Well, I think it's good that they're getting that money. I think it's good they're getting that platform. And depending on production costs and expenses, it may be a sound strategy. I'm not sure what the expense is to put this fight on. But look, man, they're providing some more stuff on Fight Pass. That's a necessary thing they need to do to keep customers happy. And, you know, it'll be interesting to see what these fight cards look like down the line. It's always, we know this, man. You always want to start off strong. And they aren't starting off super duper strong. So it makes you wonder what it's going to be like weeks, months from now.
Yeah, they're going to do 8 straight weeks till the end of August. So, look, in Fight Pass.
Does it just end in 8 weeks? Is it just over?
Yeah, 8 weeks. This is what they're doing. It's August. The last week of August is the last show they're doing. And I'm sure that it's going to be one of those things that if this succeeds and there's a lot of people watching, you know, it's a fight series that will continue. I mean, it's going to be a great proving ground for the UFC to kind of find new prospects and guys that are going to, can potentially come into the UFC. It's a great opportunity for all those guys to be on the show. And, there's a lot of interesting names that are part of this show coming up in the next couple of weeks. Of course, later on this week, we will have a preview podcast for this weekend's MMA, Bellator, and the UFC. So be on the lookout for that. Of course, you can always listen to this podcast on RadioInfluence.com. Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, TuneIn Radio, and Google Play. Of course, be sure to give Daniel a follow on Twitter at DanielGalvonDGG. Be sure to give me a follow as well on Twitter at Jason_Ford. So let's go wrap it up for this episode of the MMA Report Post-Fight Podcast, which you hear following every UFC event on RadioInfluence.com.
This is an Ian Beckles Flavor in Your Ear Quick Fix on Radio Influence.
Venus Williams was out there, and she won her first round. And Venus has been through a whole lot of stuff, Venus Williams. I know she's been through some physical ailments. I think her sister got murdered, which Serena would be going through as well. So Venus has been through some stuff, and if you didn't hear, Venus Williams was in a fatal car crash in June, which is right around, it was just happened not too long ago. She was in a fatal car crash and killed somebody. Okay. And there was no citation. There was no charge. And now they're finding out that she was at fault. All right. So we all drive crazy sometimes, and you can swerve and hit somebody. Anybody can do that. We all drive crazy. But I guess they found out she was at fault, and she was to the point where I guess she was, almost secluded for a while because she was going through a bad thing. You kill somebody, you got to deal with their family. You got to deal with the mental anguish of all that. So after her first round victory, she was up there on the podium, and I guess they were told to not bring it up. Okay? And probably the worst thing you can do to somebody in the media is tell them not to bring it up. So somebody in the media brought it up, and there was poor Venus Williams, vulnerable as hell, up on the podium. And, athletes at times can be fake. Okay. I watched Venus Williams, look at the camera, bow her head a little bit. And what I saw come out was real, because there was 2 minutes of silence, and it felt like every emotion that she ever had came oozing out. And I really felt for her, because I don't know the whole situation. Supposedly there wasn't drugs or alcohol involved, but she was at fault. So these were real emotions that came out. It was 2 or 3. It could have been 4 minutes. It seemed like 4 minutes where she was attempting to speak and nothing was coming out. Finally, she just broke down and she kind of walked off. And I guess she had enough wherewithal to come back and finish the interview. But to me, that was real emotion because, you know, you can act a fool, but when you kill somebody and remove somebody from the earth, you know, there's a lot of other people out there that you're dealing with. So, you know, I'm hoping it all works out with for Venus Williams, but when something like that happens, I don't think it ever goes away.
You can find Ian Beckles Flavor in Your Ear on iTunes, Stitcher, TuneIn Radio, and RadioInfluence.com.